on this episode of I'm Not a Lawyer, But the Debrief.
So I got in a fight with the prosecutor in the courtroom. I mean, literally a fight. And they had to pull me off that motherfucker. Well, excuse me.
Hope you have.
This is great. The judge held me in contempt and put me in jail.
If you're not ready, then go ahead and tell me you're not ready.
I object to you getting records. You've been intrusive into people's personal lives.
In other words, the car didn't hit him and he wasn't hit by the car.
I'm not a lawyer, but... Are y'all keeping up? I'm not a lawyer, but
the debrief.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of I'm Not a Lawyer, But
the Debrief.
I am Melanie, aka I'm Not a Lawyer, But, and I am joined by my co-host,
Gooseberry. How y'all doing?
Before we get into the episode, we want to thank our sponsors.
We want to say thank you to Breeze and to Uncommon Goods.
And we're going to tell you more about them in the episode. And we are not lawyers or legal experts, but we get to talk about legal things on this podcast. And every now and again, we bring people who are actual experts, actual lawyers, people who know more than we do, to join us on this podcast and talk about all the things that we don't know, that we think we know. And so today we are so very excited. I always love special guest episodes. I always love when we have a guest to join us and have conversations. So as you know, or you should know, we've been talking a ton about the YSL case on this podcast, as well as all over my platform. And so today we are so very excited to be joined by attorney Nicole Westmoreland. She was the attorney for Quamarvius Nichols. He was the first defendant in the YSL case to take a plea as of late, right? We know that there were some plea deals that happened in December 2022, but during the course of the current trial, there were some plea deals that happened. We've talked about it on this pod. So anyway, we are going to be joined by Ms. Westmoreland to talk a little bit about her experience on this trial, her representation of Mr. Nichols, and all the things. So that's what we do.
Let's get it.
Are you joining? You're joining us, Mr. Harvey?
Yes.
Ponytail's looking good. And so we are so very excited to have two guests join us today for the episode, and that is none other then attorney Nicole Westmoreland and attorney Bruce Harvey. Thank you so much for being here.
It's our pleasure. Thanks for asking us.
Of course. Thank you. I mean, you need no introduction, but if you could for a second, just introduce yourselves and, of course, who you represented in the YSL trial.
Nicole Westmoreland, and I represented Mr. Nichols.
Same. Bruce Harvey, Mr. Nichols, who is also affectionately known as Qua.
Free Qua.
Yes.
So to start off, I know you guys did an interview yesterday, I believe, and I got to watch some of that. And so I'm trying very hard. I don't want to be repetitive and have you guys answer the same questions multiple times. But if you could just start off with how you got involved with the case. Is it just a matter of this also? Let me say this. The name of this podcast and my, you know, moniker is I'm Not a Lawyer, But. And so many of the questions, especially anytime we get to have actual attorneys on the platform, we always try to take advantage and ask questions that, you know, you guys are better told or better suited to explain to the audience. And so just know some of the questions I'll ask are on that to address that. But that said, is it just a matter of Mr. Nichols reached out and then you guys were like, sure, you know, we'll take you? Or how did you get involved with the case?
Well, he reached out, his family reached out to us originally. And, you know, the case was exceedingly large and it started off large. So at the beginning, there wasn't an ability for us to get in the case. So we weren't originally in the case, but they had contacted us. And as the case moved forward a little bit, they finally got the ability to get us in the case. And we said, okay. The problem is we said okay at the beginning, thinking, you know, there's no way everybody's going to trial and together in this case. that it's going to get split up, and there are discernible groups that can that it can be manageable. Mm-hmm. So I thought, and we thought, oh yeah, okay, any sane judge is going to split it up. We're going to have a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks or so maximum. So we're in. It's going to be fun. We'll get in the case. But no, of course, that didn't happen. As everybody knows and all your followers know, we've been in the, you know, the quicksand and in the swamp for the last 22 months. So what started off as what we thought would be an interesting, and it still is an interesting case, but a much shorter case and managed in a professional way, which at the beginning it obviously wasn't. So that's what happened.
And in legal terms, because I know that you want this, without a motion to sever, it was denied.
Well, and so did everybody else. Everybody's motion to sever was denied at the beginning. And then, you know, the imperialness of Judge Glanville said, okay, I'm denying all the motions. We're starting trial January 4th. So since January 4th, of what the hell year was it? What year was it? 2023. Right? We have been continuously going. So,
I was going to say, I remember all the motions for severance and all the many times that that was raised. Are there benefits to, or can you talk about benefits to this case being severed? And if there are any for it not, for your clients, not your clients not being severed, were there any benefits to that? On both sides?
Well, sure. Yes, there are always benefits. Benefits to getting severed are you're not in trial with people who may have a lot more evidence against them than against you. So there's what's called a prejudicial spillover. Mm-hmm. You know, everything comes in against everybody. So you have some old event that you had nothing to do with. And you sit there through the event like we did for 20 months.
Yeah.
And all of that gets to be used against you. So the benefit of a severance is to get out of that position where all that spillover doesn't impact you. On the other hand, if it's going to come in anyhow and everybody is defending every event, then you're a more unified team. But, you know, I mean, I know you all have followed this and you followed it very carefully. Look, there is nothing in the world that hasn't happened in this case. People have gotten severed because they got pregnant and were having babies during the course of this litigation.
Yeah.
Lawyers got arrested. You know, computers got seized.
Yeah.
Everything in the world has happened in this case.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know what to say. What else to say? But there are benefits and burdens. And, you know, and I know that you have followed this. We continuously made motions to sever because we thought all of these events that happened a decade ago or more, and that had no real relevance to us or, frankly, to relevance to anything. You know, if you remember, there was a $20 undercover sale of marijuana back in 2015. And they
like brought at the green store or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's exactly what I see. You got
your followers.
I've watched all days.
And 2015, $20 marijuana. They brought in the undercover cop. Sure. They brought in the cop that made the arrest. They brought in the crime lab to say, this is weed. You know, they could have passed it around and we could have tested it and told you whether it was weed or not. But be that as it may, all of that stuff came in. I mean, it was ludicrous. It was ridiculous. So.
Is it common practice?
You can ask a question. Yeah. Come on. Okay.
Is it common practice to, for you to think that the lawyer, for the judge to sever the cases? Like, is was that shocking to you that he didn't?
No. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, judges, the court doesn't want to sever cases all the time because of judicial economy. If you take everybody to trial at the same time, then you don't have to spend the money to take everybody to trial separately. So you're going to need a good reason. Now, I think 28 defendants was a good reason, but nonetheless, severance denied.
Well, the general rule, the base, the default position is people that are charged together get tried together. Mm-hmm. So there has to be some special reason, some very prejudicial reason for a judge to say, okay, y'all are charged together, so you're going to go to trial together. Now, you know, the days that used to be that we had all these mega trials back with the old mafia trials and the big conspiracy trials back in the 90s. I mean, that was the big thing. But everybody realized how that sucked resources and it sucked everybody into these long mega trials. And nope, that stopped. That stopped a long time ago. And why it's been revived in this jurisdiction now in the 2020s, it's nothing but political expediency. And the names of the people, I mean, Jeffrey is a draw. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason to have a trial with 28 people unless it was Jeffrey, unless we're going to do it for a public reason, and unless we want a big splash. I mean, there's just nobody does that anymore. Nobody has these mega trials anymore.
Interesting.
Have you ever been a part of a mega trial? Something similar to this one? Let's take a break from the episode and talk about Breeze. Okay. Are you looking for the perfect buzz without the hangover? Breeze's next-gen social tonics are the evolution of drinking. They use the unique blend of hemp-derived THC, CBD, and lion's mane mushrooms to create a euphoric, calming, and inspiring effect unlike anything you ever tried. Now, I know what you're thinking. No, it's not an edible. It kicks in 10 minutes after your first sip, and it lasts an hour and a half, just like your favorite cocktail. It's subtle enough for your mom to try, but stackable to create the ideal experience. Sparkly blended and crafted with notes of Italian lemon and elderberry, it's only 30 calories, contains only 8 grams of natural sugar from agave, and uses organic ingredients, making it the perfect guilt-free beverage. Breeze is 100% legal and ships across the continental United States. Just use our code LAWYER at drinkbreeze.com to claim $10 store credit toward the first order. Skip the hangovers and enjoy louder laughs, brighter colors, and tastier snacks with Breeze. Now back to the show.
Unfortunately, yes. But again, you know, back in the day, there were the Mexican heroin cartels, the black tar heroin. You know, Big Meech just got out.
He sure did.
Remember those days? And that was a big mega trial. So there have been a lot. And, you know, three or four defendants takes up enough time and resources and money that's kind of the outer limit. But we are seeing that. We are seeing that now. And again, I'm going to go back to the political expediency. We now have a special gang unit at the Attorney General's office, who, by the way, is going to be running for governor. So we see all these big cases coming up. I just think it is an old, outmoded practice that is being revived for nothing, no reason other than politics.
And I'll add that this is the longest trial in Georgia history, as I'm sure that you know. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, no, we haven't been through anything quite like that because it's the longest trial. But
and
it was ridiculous and uncalled for.
Yeah.
And just to be blunt.
Yeah. And by nature, it's the most expensive being the longest. Is that accurate?
I would suspect so. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, you know, there's still the old Trump indictment out there, but the election has changed that. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah. How long have you guys both been practicing?
Well, my daughter here.
He's been practicing longer than I've been born. But how long are you now, Bruce?
How old?
How long have you been practicing now?
You're not supposed to ask a man that.
You're not supposed to ask a woman that, but go ahead. How long?
I started practicing in 1977.
And I think this is, I'm entering into my eighth year, I believe.
Look at that. Look at that.
Welcome.
And so much better than I was ever in my first decades of practice. She is quite accomplished.
Absolutely.
In her own right in the limited time. And, you know, 8 years is a short period of time, but quite accomplished, quite sophisticated.
No, I just wanted to put some respect on it. We know you're a legend out here, Mr. Harvey. And so I wanted to put some respect on your name. And also, obviously, Miss Westmoreland, I mean, I told you in the email, you have one of the best, my favorite crosses, because the way that you present information, and it's just one of my favorite. It feels like a mic drop every time. Anyway, I just wanted to call that out. A little respect on that. But I want to ask, because we were talking about, obviously, all of the severances being denied and the previous judge and all of that. And as watchers, you know, we are at home getting to scream because we're not in the courtroom and we're like, what is happening? And I mean, so many people, I think, have learned so much because of this trial, just the home people. What was you guys' experience with having Judge Glanville preside over this case for the first few months? Were we screaming at home and you were screaming inside? What was your experience?
You know, I have known Judge Glanville for a long time. We were originally happy to have him as our trial judge. We thought originally that he had a good demeanor, that he would let us try the case, that he would be responsive to our legal arguments. Things went downhill pretty rapidly. Mm-hmm. But yes, there was a lot of screaming on the inside. those thought bubbles, mm-hmm. where what comes out of your mouth is dramatically different from what's in your head.
Yes.
You know, and it just devolved to a point, obviously, where that we weren't getting a fair trial. Mm-hmm. And it was true. Look at the difference. Mm-hmm. Now that Judge Whitaker is on the case and just doesn't acquiesce mm-hmm. to everything that the prosecution does, and in particular, one of the prosecution, her initials are A.L. I'm not going to say who it
is. Yeah. Yeah. Well, on that note, I have, as we're trying to talking about, you know, the prosecution team and the transition to Whitaker and the change, I think, that happened, I just want to quickly play a clip. It was during that transition, and there were some conversations about discovery that had not been turned over, which seemed to be a recurring theme. Miss Westmoreland, you said to the judge, this rule has already been in place already. Let me just play the clip really quick.
And that is going to go be the rule, be the requirement moving forward for everything. So if there's anything out there right now that's kind of in progress, tell them about it. Okay. And moving forward, as things come up, when you decide I'm going to be doing something about this, tell them about it. Okay. And I expect that to be the rule that gets followed moving forward. Okay. Anything from the defense on that topic and that rule? And I know it is not ideal, but it seems that up until recently, this trial was sort of everything was on a rolling basis. And I can't do a whole lot about that, but moving forward, that's what it's going to be. Yes, ma'am.
So, Your Honor, that's
Everything was not on a rolling basis.
Wow.
And the rule that you just implemented was already the rule.
Okay.
Chief Judge Glanville, at a certain point, because we were receiving late discovery disclosures all the time.
Okay.
And at a certain point, he said he was fed up. He spoke to the state. He said he was drawing the line there.
Okay.
And that any late disclosures after that, and he did exactly what you did today, maybe not in those exact words, but he said, is there anything else?
Okay.
So he gave the state this opportunity already, and he told Ms. Love specifically that if any other late disclosure of discovery came after that date, that it would be met with remedies and sanctions.
Okay.
So we're here again, and I'm just asking that before you exercise patience,
don't exercise patience.
I call that up because the question I have out of that, not just to show you saying we've been through this already, but it felt like this case and the prosecutors crossed a line that I think the nature of defense and prosecutors naturally are adversarial. You guys obviously are fighting for different things. And so that seems normal. And so, but it also feels like there's also a sense of respectability and, you know, collaboration that can occur. And when you see clips like that, and that wasn't the first or the last time, the question I have is this as crazy to everybody else as it seems to me? And so what did it feel like this crossed the line? How was this for you guys working with the prosecutors and this kind of thing seeming to happen so much?
Well, I was, and we were fed up long before that moment with that clip. But I mean, it was just ridiculous. You know, it was the case, the state's case seemed to be disorganized, mm-hmm. unprepped, over-prosecuted, just, you know, making it up as it goes and just, you know, throwing witnesses on stand and just trying to recover every day mm-hmm. from the crappy day the day mm-hmm. before. And, you know, we were fed up and we felt good that Judge Whitaker, you know, came in and that she wanted to create some organization and be fair and to put her foot down and to make this trial go a lot more smoothly. But she had not had the opportunity to be there, you know, for however long we were there before, you know, I stood up and made the statements from the clip that you just showed. And we just wanted to let her know, wait a minute, Judge, we appreciate you putting your foot down here, but this has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. You know, we follow this in the courtroom, and we love to see the comments. We every day we watch the commentary and we watch the comments, and some of them are fabulous. Some of them are really good, and they're hilarious, and that's all we can do not to laugh. But tell me, you know, we mm-hmm. as lawyers are just as interested in your perception, you know, as citizens people who are following this and have an interest in our judicial system, and especially its fairness to the folks that are brought in. You tell us, what do you think?
Yeah.
I want to hear what you guys have to say.
Yeah. So go ahead.
I think that the state fumbled the ball several times. And that if those guys were my brothers or related to me, I would want.
Well, they are your brothers, my friend. They are your brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So treat
Understood.
Them that way.
Yeah.
Treat
them that way. So to your point and to the point I'm about to make, I felt like it should have been a mistrial from jump. You know, once you cross the line so many times, you know, the state, before you even bring these guys in, you've supposed to do your research and have everything lined up to get a conviction, but you didn't even do your homework, you know? So,
and we saw that every single day.
You're
correct. You're absolutely correct. When you say my family, my brothers, you know, every one of these people, every person that gets sucked into the judicial system, and especially in something like this, is you and your family.
Yeah.
Everybody is entitled to what you just said. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to do. And that's what we want to help to make the system do. But we appreciate your commentary and your observations about how we can do that. Yes. And how we can make sure that every person, every one of your brothers, every one of your sisters, everybody is treated the same mm-hmm. way in a fair and efficient manner.
Yeah. Okay.
And so we really appreciate y'all's commentary.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just add to that too. I really do. I cover cases, and obviously this one it took a lot of time to cover. But my goal in talking about cases or clip, whatever, was to always be just present what happened for the day. That's like, let me tell you what happened in the case for the day. Mm-hmm. And over time for me, it came to exactly what you were saying. At the end of the day, everyone deserves a fair trial. Right. And so, you know, people sometimes the comments people are, you know, they get off the handle and we're like, OK, reel it back in. But I think at the heart of the issue with the case was a fair trial. And that's a constitutional right. And at some point it felt like that's not what's happening here. Like there's so many things that are just unfair. And when you start to think about the disadvantage that defendants are already at, you have the state. Okay, they have all these resources. Okay, and then you're in jail many times, right? Some of these defendants are in jail. So you're fighting against that. You have to pay for your attorneys. You have to pay for your defense. You have to pay. So you have all these things stacked against you. And then to see the state on top of that disadvantage, you see the state still being unfair on top of that. That I think was the most disheartening for me. It's like you're beating us when we down. How do we even defend ourselves when the trial itself is becoming unfair? So that I think for me, that is what was so shocking every day. Every day there's something new. There's late discovery. There's, you know, stuff being put on the screen that shouldn't be put on the screen. There, it's all of that started to feel like. Somebody got to do something.
Well, you know, you got into you all, the public, you in particular, got a view of the judicial system in this case that you ordinarily would not have.
Yeah.
You don't see trials, and especially, and I'm going to use the word show trials like this, that last this long and are handled this way.
Yeah.
So you got an exceptional view of the criminal justice system at its worst in this particular case. And now it's segueing into its best. So you got the best of both worlds, and you can really, I guess, understand and help everybody understand what's going on and why we really need to have the public watching these trials to ensure that everybody knows what's going on in our judicial system.
Yeah.
And that's why it's great to have you guys out there. I'm serious.
If it wasn't recorded, if the internet didn't exist.
Yes, that's right.
This would be a fable. You wouldn't even believe this happened.
100%.
Yes.
You know? 100%.
You are 100% right. Yeah. And that's why it's so important. That's why the openness.
Yeah.
That's why the public has the right to be there and see what's going on. And understand what's going on. The transparency of the judicial system is probably the least transparent branch in the of the government.
Yeah.
So, we thank you guys.
Well, thank you for saying that even. And on that, I actually came to Atlanta. So we live in Los Angeles, but I went to Spelman. And so I came to Atlanta for homecoming. But of course, I'm like, if I'm in town, I have to go to the trial. So I flew in and decided to go to court on day 150, which just so happens to be the day that hashtag free qua was read. And attorney Miss Westmoreland stood up and said, you can't unring that bell. And then it was, well, do you want a motion for a mistrial without prejudice? And then the room goes quiet and Ms. Westmoreland says, we need to huddle. I was in there like, oh my gosh, this is the day of peace. What is happening? So just to say, it was an insane day, first of all, but I mean, for all of this to happen and then that day to take place the way that it did, and that really started or seemed to start these conversations about the plea deals, and it results in, you know, four of the defendants having accepting plea deals. My question, there's so many questions about that day, but when she says, when Judge Whitaker says, well, do you, when she is entertaining this idea for a motion for a mistrial with, actually, first, because I'm not a lawyer, talk about the difference between with prejudice and without prejudice. And then what are you thinking when she is entertaining this idea?
Take a break from the episode and talk about Uncommon Goods. Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here. Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and it's exactly what you want it to feel. Uncommon Goods, they soar, they search the globe for all these handmade, absolutely remarkable gifts from small businesses. So what I'm going to do this Christmas, I told you all last time, I'm purchasing this pickleball, indoor pickleball system to where the kids can play inside. I'm also traveling this year a lot. So I'm going to be on their travel site and I'm going to be getting me some of them pillows, the neck pillows. Mm-hmm. And they have these quilts. So I'm going to make sure I get what I need from Uncommon Goods.
Get something for your wife.
Yes. I'm going to look for something for my wife as well. Uncommon Goods looks for high quality products, unique and often handmade. And they won't last long because it's not a big company making them. So you're not getting 1,000 in production. You understand? So if you want something unique, you should go to the website ASAP and get it before it's sold out, because it might not ever be made again. And with every purchase you make to Uncommon Goods, they give $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated over $3 million to date. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/lawyer.
It's lawyer.
That's uncommongoods.com/lawyer.
Lawyer.
For 15% off. Don't miss out of this limited time offer from Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. Now back to the show.
Okay, so with prejudice means the state cannot bring the charges back. Mm-hmm. Without prejudice means they can. So initially when the judge said, how do you want it? I immediately started arguing that we were goaded into it, which is the standard, mm-hmm. to have it mistrial with prejudice. So I immediately went into argument mode. Mm-hmm. The judge cut that short and she said, oh, I don't think something to mm-hmm. the fact of, I don't think that the prosecutor did it on purpose. You should have seen her face.
Yep.
Now I was standing there smiling and thinking, uh-huh. but I wanted to argue on behalf of us that although that moment may have not been on purpose, unprepping witnesses, period, is on purpose. That is a conscious decision. Mm-hmm. So I was ready to argue that for us, but then the judge says, but do you want it, you know, without prejudice? And I'm like, wait a minute. So then I look at Bruce and I'm like, do we want this? And I look at our client, and it was a so real moment, because we had asked for it so many times. We felt like we deserved it so many times.
Yeah.
We really wanted it with prejudice, obviously, so that the state couldn't bring the case back. You know, but that moment we had a real decision to make, because you know, we did feel like the case was going well in our favor. Mm-hmm. We felt like that we could get an acquittal. And so it was like, wait, do we really want to stop this right now? And it's going so bad for us and so terrible for the state. But at the same time, you have to be careful, because, you know, we believe that the jury had heard a lot of evidence that was not, you know, admissible, that should have been heard. So you have to be careful and make those decisions wisely. So, you know, we asked for the opportunity to huddle. And as you said, that sparked all of the plea negotiations. And then mm-hmm. the rest is history.
Well, it was a good day for you to be there.
Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh. I was literally, and I had tried to go last year. We are from Atlanta, so I'm always there. And I tried to go before and I couldn't make it. And it just so happens the day I go, I was like, what a day for me to attend this trial.
That's amazing.
I thought you were going to say something.
No, I'm just so happy that that just so happily was the day that you were there.
That the night before, we were just talking about her not going.
Yeah, I changed my phone. It was,
and she changed her mind.
It was very random.
That morning, she was out of there. So
up until that point, because I remember when Whitaker first came on, one of the things that she said, and she said a couple times, is, if you guys want to talk about, please, you know, maybe y'all should everybody talk and let's see. And it seems like everyone, their response is like, yeah, we're continuing on. And so what is the difference? Is it that she was finally entertaining it? Like, how was it that the state wasn't really offering anything worth much before? Like, what made the difference this time?
A little bit of both, I think. I think that everybody realized that Judge Whitaker was kind of at her wit's end. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. That's what he said.
Last week. That's
an apt analogy in this situation. She just got to the point where she said, you know something, that this is it. That the moment is now. You want a mistrial? I'm going to entertain it. So we all had to huddle. The real problem was, we had been asking for mistrials the entire time. Yeah. And we'd been asking for severances. And really, what we decided is that Nicole was going to ask for the mistrial for this, thinking it was kind of routine, and it really wasn't going to be the straw.
Yeah.
So we said, we've done it so often, we got to do it now, or we're going to look like we're not, backing ourselves up. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, that was it. So we had a lot of thinking to do.
Yeah.
How do you come up with a plea deal? Do you look at the charges and whatever's going on, and you say, let's take some off of here, let's take some off of here, and then you submit?
Let's think about this kind of particular case. Okay. Mm-hmm. This particular case had a number of predicate acts plus the separate charges. Mm-hmm. Our guy had pled guilty to some minor drug offenses in 2015 and 2017 or 18. Those were already done. Those were part of the predicate acts. But the other predicate acts and the other specific counts were murder. Gang counts,
mm-hmm.
murder,
mm-hmm.
gun counts. So significant counts. And we were pretty much, Mr. Nichols was pretty much the last events of the of all the predicate acts. So he, chronologically, he was at the end. Now, when you ask, how do you work this? We didn't want to go in. We didn't want to plead to a gang.
Mm-hmm.
We clearly were not going to plead to a murder.
Yeah.
We didn't want to plead to a recidivist gun count. Mm. So at the end of the day, our deal based upon the unique factors in our case is, we're not going to admit gang. We're not going to admit murder. We're not going to admit guns. All of those have subsumed. They're all in a RICO conspiracy. But we said, remember, we didn't agree to anything other than what he already pled to.
Mm-hmm.
And so we struck the deal.
But think about that for a moment. He had already pled to the other two cases.
Yes.
And no murder, no drug. No gun, no cooperation,
and
he just been there.
We were at home like, who? How did this happen? How did you go from these charges? And Mr. Harvey went up to that mic and said, we ain't agreeing to none of that. We said, count one. I don't know what y'all talking about. We said, count one.
There you go.
And then I'm going to need you to, sorry if I'm loud. I get excited because I really, I am fascinated by it all. I think you guys are absolutely incredible. But what I want to ask, okay, this is my legal, non-legal mind. When you were talking, Mr. Harvey, you were talking about The fact that he already pled and it's the drug offense is a part of the RICO and the conspiracy is essentially between him and the dealer, it sounded like. So it sounded like you were saying this has nothing to do with YSL, but we're still going to agree to count one because of the drug deal specifically. Like, can you walk me through it a little bit better than I'm trying to explain?
Well, a RICO conspiracy requires the commission of a couple of predicate acts. That's why there were all those predicate acts in the indictment. You do not have to personally commit any of those acts, really. But some of those predicate acts...
Explain predicate acts.
Well, the acts that they said underlined were the basis for the RICO conspiracy. But they were also substantive counts. In other words, the murder was in the RICO. Mm-hmm. The murder was charged separately.
Yes.
All right. But all you have to do to commit a RICO conspiracy is commit a couple of acts. So we said, we ain't agreeing to any of this other stuff.
Uh-huh.
We agree to what we already pled guilty to.
Yes.
Yeah. That forms the basis of the RICO conspiracy. We're not agreeing we were in a gang. Mm-hmm. We ain't agreeing that committitted a murder. We didn't agree that we possessed firearms. We are not agreeing to any of that. Now, Mr. Nichols had those two prior convictions, mm-hmm. which kind of formed the basis of why he had some time behind the RICO conspiracy. Jeffrey had spent the time, but he had no prior convictions. But, you know, he pled mm-hmm. guilty, not NOLO, not anything else, to a gang charge.
Yep.
So now he's got a gang charge conviction, and God bless him, you know, he's out. He can be back to making music.
Yeah.
He spent 2.5 years in jail, and he's such a sweet kid. Everybody's a kid to me. But so his decision was a very practical decision. But even he had great defenses. He had great lawyers who fought every minute, every yeah. second of this case. But he had to plead to a gang charge.
Yeah.
We didn't.
Yeah. Well, we know. Yeah. And you made sure they knew too.
So in the process, you write this up and you give it to the state.
Well, the state presents first, right? I mean, generally speaking, the state presents. Go ahead.
Well, it's every case is different.
Okay.
But no, that's not. So generally speaking, it could go either way. Defense okay. can come to the state and say, you know, we have an offer to you, or the state can come to the defense and say, we have an offer for you. You can accept that offer. You can decline that offer. You can counter that offer. So it can go either way.
Okay. It's just like any other negotiation.
Yeah.
You guys
like buying a house or something.
Yeah.
Life is a matter of negotiating.
Yeah. That's cool.
Okay. So you guys have the plea deal. It's accepted. There's obviously, and Mr. Nichols is the first one of the four. You guys were able to come to the agreement, but it seems like before everybody else was. And then he accepts. What is it? How do you all feel about how this was resolved for your client? And the fact that this is now over, for you guys, obviously the case is continuing, but how do you feel?
We were happy because he was happy. Okay. And we were happy that, you know, that it was just the RICO for the two situations that he had already pled guilty to. We were definitely happy about the no factual acknowledgments mm-hmm. that he did not have to or choose to stand up there and initial and agree to acknowledgments that he did not say, that he did not write, mm-hmm. that the state wrote for him. And that it didn't have to be a situation where it was just save face for the state and he has to bear the brunt of that. So we were happy about that. Now, it's no secret that we love to litigate and that we were ready and able and capable to take it all the way. We had not even given our opening statement. Mm-hmm. And we were looking forward to opening and closing, and we were just looking forward to winning, you know, really. But it was a good outcome for him, and he was happy, so we were happy. And you know, that's my
the truth.
Yeah.
I missed the guy. I missed him.
Yeah.
That was my next question. Was how, what type of relationship was built through this trial? Because you see him every day.
I personally missed the guy. I really enjoyed getting to know him and seeing him on a daily basis. I told the court that we did a word a day.
And yes.
And we put it in a sentence, and he would ask about a word and he would write a sentence out for me. This is a smart kid. And he was, I truly miss the guy. I can't wait till he gets released and we can go out and I can introduce him to my spirit animal.
Oh, Lord.
Gray Goose.
Gray Goose?
I was like, where are you going with this?
This is phenomenal. This is great.
That's wild.
Great. We really, you know, we care about all of our clients.
Yeah.
And,
you
know, and he was a special one. Yeah, we spent so much time,
but it's different to spend daily, you know, time with your client for years.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, so it's a different type of relationship. It's a different type of bond. And we just look forward to him coming home soon. Yeah.
And you know,
be with his family.
He was a pretty sophisticated young man. He got to know the system, and we'd look at
seriously.
Him. Somebody would say something, and he would look at me, and he would say, "Objection!
Objection!
Yeah.
Yes!
And so, and
this is amazing. Nichols over here objecting. I love it.
Yeah.
And then he would look and say, "Why did they object to that? Or why didn't they object to that?" He would try to understand that process.
Yeah.
And, you know, folks think they're an adult when they're 28, 30 years old. I don't know how y'all, but the 2 years that we spent with him, there was a dramatic, in my opinion, change in moving from youth to an adult who understood and can look at me and say, why didn't they object? Or that was an objection, wasn't it? And what about this? He became, in front of our eyes, I believe, a intelligent, I don't know how sophisticated, but I could see the growth in the young man. And that was great. That was just great.
That's amazing.
I love that.
That's all right.
Okay, Patreon, if you have questions, put a couple in there because I'm getting down to my last two.
Me and my daughter do a word.
They do. When we saw you say that, I was like, oh my gosh, because we have two daughters and he does word of the day or word of the week with them. I just love that moment. Have either of you ever gone to jail for a client?
Yeah.
And this is, of course, a recall to Brian Steele loosening up that tie. And I was like, oh, this is a moment. So have you done it as well?
Hold on. Let me say one thing. I will. That's number one.
Listen.
Absolutely. But number two, on like a day-to-day basis, I'm scared that I'm going to have to try to get him out.
We saw the clip circulating.
Go ahead. Answer that.
I've been in jail a lot.
Whoa. Oh, seriously. We have his we have his jumpsuits and pictures. And
oh my gosh.
I can say this. I'll tell one story. This is an old war story. I was in a trial in a community outside of Atlanta, a very conservative community. And it was my anniversary, my wedding anniversary.
Oh, I knew this.
And the judge had agreed that he was going to let us out early on a Friday evening so that we could go out for our wedding anniversary. So I got in a fight with the prosecutor in the courtroom. I mean, literally a fight. And they had to pull me off that motherfucker. But, excuse me.
Oh, yeah.
At any rate, this is great. The judge held me in contempt and put me in jail. So I call my wife. I'm in jail. I call my wife and I say, honey, guess what? I'm in jail. I don't know whether we can go out for our anniversary tonight. And so she says, bullshit, you did this on purpose. And hung up on me. So the judge comes down to the jail and says, listen, I know it's your anniversary and I know it's important to you. I'll tell you what I'll do. If you have someone pick you up here at the jail, I'll let you out tonight for your anniversary if you promise me you'll report back to the jail by seven o'clock in the morning. So I call my wife again. I said, I got this worked out. You got to get me at the jail.
Yeah.
We got, you know, it's our anniversary. We got a limo. A limo drives up to the jail. They let me out of jail. I come out in my orange jail uniform, change in the car. We go out to dinner. We have a great dinner. My wife thinks I'm not lying to her anymore. And I didn't do it on purpose. And then they drop me back off in jail. So,
wow.
It was great. Do you see why I love working? That's
a memory right there, boy. I'm going to remember that.
Yes.
Wow.
Where are you from?
Where am I originally from?
Yeah, where you grow up? Where did you grow up?
Massachusetts, Worcester, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston.
Listen,
I'm from Atlanta.
Yeah,
Atlanta, Georgia.
Absolutely.
I'm from Decatur, Georgia, by the way.
Okay, that's close enough.
I gotta run. I gotta go see my wife. She's waiting.
Yeah, please. She won't be calling us. We are not holding you in contempt. Thank you so much for being here and sharing that story. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for asking us. Thank you so much for asking Nicole. Nicole asked me if I would join her, and I always want to join her.
I love it. I appreciate it.
Nice meeting you, and I appreciate your energy.
Yeah, this was great.
We appreciate you. Thank you for helping us give public trials.
Of course.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I just have one final question. Go ahead.
You good?
Okay. The question I got the opportunity to talk to Mr. Keith Adams, which was amazing. Was amazing.
Yes, I really, really enjoy his cross examination style. You know, that's my style, so I like that. Yes. But anyway, go ahead.
The question I forgot to ask him that I have got to ask you is all of the social media attention, and you guys have both said, you know, that it was great and you appreciate that and all of that. But everyone is convinced there's going to be a movie. So who gets to play you? Who do you want to play you in the movie?
I have no idea. I will have to give that some thought. To be blunt, I haven't had a chance to watch movies and TV in so long.
I mean, that's real.
You know, I realized that I took it for granted. Like right now, I don't even know what I would watch when I get the chance. Even though this trial is over, you know, we have a lot of clients who've been patiently waiting. So we're right back into work mode. But I do not know. But whoever it is, they better.
It better be good.
Absolutely.
I give a suggestion.
Somebody said Keke Palmer, but go ahead.
All right. You know,
the Love and Basketball.
Sanaa Lathan.
Yes.
I low key think her too.
That'll be you.
Or Keke, because I think Keke has the attitude too. I think she'll do a good job. Anyway, I think that's all. I didn't see any immediate questions that I could quickly throw at you. Sorry, Patreon, if I missed any good ones. But again, thank you so much for being here. It was a joy to be able to watch you and Mr. Harvey and all of the attorneys throughout this case. You know, I feel like I've learned a ton. Obviously, everyone watching, we've all learned so much. And I think grown a respect and even more of a respect for the work that you guys do. It was really incredible to watch. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. See you later.
All right. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
I hope you guys enjoyed. Again, it was the first time we did it with the YouTube members and Patreon. So if you are watching this tomorrow, because we're recording it on Thursday, it'll be posted on Friday. But if you are watching this and want to be a part of the next conversation, because we have some more coming, make sure you join the Patreon or join the YouTube members. Thank you for watching. Join the join the Patreon. Follow me. I'm Not a Lawyer, but on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all the places. Like, subscribe, do all the things the YouTubers tell you to.
You can catch me on IG, GOOLZBY, and on YouTube, Building with Goose.
And with that,
court is adjourned.